Starting with, I can't see in all my glasses. Who was that down there? Oh.
I'm sorry, it's Lars Hoffman from Mike and Stuff.
Mahmoud Latouf from Taggy.
Hi, Brian Huseman from Amazon.
Kat McGowan from LinkedIn.
Aparna Sridhar from Google.
Elisa Cooper, Thomson Reuters.
Steve DelBianco with NetChoice.
Susan Calgucci, Facebook.
Philip Corwin, Virtual Law, on behalf of Internet Commerce Association.
Marilyn Cade, MKD LLC.
Isaac from Mozambique, Philip.
Scott McCormick, Gavant.
Mark Benedict, Point Barrow.
Karen Law from Alibaba.
Marie Patello, AIM.
Angie Graves, Web Group.
Mary Jo Kuchler, Name Administration.
A couple folks came in.
J. Scott Evans, Adobe Systems.
Sarah Deutsch, Nominating Committee.
Jim Baskin, Verizon.
We're just doing this so we have it on the transcript who was here.
Laura Covington, Yahoo.
Great. Did we get everybody? So, as a reminder, this is our open meeting, and we have quite an agenda today, starting off with talking a little bit about the transition and also accountability. So we've got like a full hour to discuss that. And Aparna is going to sort of take us through some of the areas that I think it would be good for us to more thoroughly understand and perhaps even get a sense of where folks are thinking. They might want to see a new structure, what that might look like. And then we'll spend the other half of the time talking about accountability. And Steve DelBianco, obviously, who's been very focused on that, will be able to take us through some of that as well. But before we jump into that, I would just open it up and ask if there are other questions or things or comments about anything that's happened so far that people would like to talk about or share. Marilyn.
I just wanted, if we have time at the end, to do a quick update on the CCWGIG from the meeting yesterday.
Okay. Anything from anyone else?
I have that in the policy section. Okay.
All right. So I know for me personally, following everything that's going on is very difficult. So Aparna has graciously agreed to help provide us with a bit of background and information so that we can just do some level setting and talk about what some of the potential options might look like in terms of the transition. Aparna?
Sure. I'll start by saying that the CWG on stewardship has put together a PDF document. It's fairly short that is for discussion at the meeting, and if you haven't read that, I think that is the single best document to provide an overview of what people are talking about and the options being considered. As with the accountability listserv, there's a lot of chaff and not too much wheat on the listserv, so it's a little hard to follow, and I think that document is a good summary.
Aparna, it's Steve DelBianco. I wanted to reinforce and support on one thing. The policy calendar that I sent out today, under CWG, I have the hyperlink to the PDF that Aparna just mentioned, and it is an easy read. Thanks. And the one I sent earlier. The one I just sent out.
Great. Yeah. So, and I think for people who haven't been following the discussion, I would say there's probably four models being proposed, some of which are similar to each other. The first one, which was the subject of a public comment at the very end of last year, is a contracting company proposal. And so the idea there is that right now there's a contract between NTIA and ICANN for the performances for the performance of the IANA functions. A new entity called Contract Co. would be established to be a new counterparty in the place of NTIA. That Contract Co., there's not a ton of detail about exactly what that structure would look like, but it would, the folks who have developed that proposal have said it would be lightweight, and that there would be a number of other sort of community review teams. The idea is that the Contract Co. would essentially report to this multi-stakeholder review team. There would also be a customer service committee that would deal with sort of day-to-day questions or improvements to the IANA function, so monitoring an SLA for compliance, raising concerns about sort of the functions being performed adequately, efficiently, et cetera. So the idea is that this customer service committee would really serve as kind of the front line to get issues resolved before escalating them further, and that the participation in that committee would be sort of focused on people who are very skilled on the technical front, and it would not be kind of a policy-making body at all, or even not even concerned with policy implementation per se. It would be truly kind of technical issues. So that, I think, is the model that people have been talking about and have had a most chance to digest. A second model that's very similar to that has been proposed, I would say, in the last week or so, and that is an external trust model. And that external trust model, I think the easiest way to think of it conceptually is it's very similar to the Contract Co. model, but instead, in lieu of having a contract, you would have a trust. Rather than having the governing legal instrument be a contract, the governing legal instrument would be a trust, and there would be a trustee who is not ICANN, who would be sort of the person with whom ICANN had a legally binding relationship. Does that make sense to folks? Okay. The third option is what people are calling an internal trust option. And so I know there's like some lawyers in the room and some not, so I'll try to make this as non-lawyery as possible, and let me know if I don't succeed. So basically the idea is that the functions themselves are constitute the body of what is being held in trust. So I think the best analogy I can come up with here is if you think about land trusts, like places where like a person who has a lot of money or a government decides to put land in a conservation trust and that is governed either through a public or a private mechanism. So the functions would be of the equivalent of the land in a land trust, for example. And the trustee in this situation would be ICANN, and ICANN would be sort of the entity responsible for sort of managing the functions and taking care of them and preserving them, et cetera, maintaining them. In this model, as with any trust, there are beneficiaries of a trust, right? So that's all of us in the model. There's direct beneficiaries, like the registries, who are direct customers of the function. There's indirect beneficiaries, like everyone in this room, and like sort of internet users at large. And the idea is that because the beneficiaries are extremely diffuse, there would be a guardian group to represent the interests of those beneficiaries. And I think you can think of this, it's a little bit, now I'm mixing the metaphors, but hopefully you'll bear with me. It's a little bit like in a proceeding where there's a dispute about what's in the best interest of a child. The idea is that, you know, children can't always make decisions for themselves, and so a guardian is appointed to sort of look out for that child's interests without regard for what everyone else thinks, whether it's the parents in that situation or the state or whomever. So this internal trust model, the guardian would have the principal check on ICANN, essentially, in terms of the functions. And I think in all three of the models that I've described, this, whether it's the guardian or the multi-stakeholder review team or the contracting co, that group of entities would have the ability to trigger a separation process wherein the functions could be pulled out of ICANN and into, and sort of whether it's an RFP process or some other process, be moved to another entity. This is just editorializing, but one of the things that we had suggested in our public comment that I think could be incorporated into all of these proposals, I think is something worth considering, is to have ICANN establish at the beginning of this transition an emergency operator. So someone, to have a contract where somebody is pre-designated to, and is measured in terms of their competency ex ante to say, if something goes sideways, we can pull the trigger and have this backup option as a pretty ready matter. That's not part of the framework of which of these models we would adopt. It's just something for us to consider. The last model is what people, the first is the contract co-model. A second is an external trust model. The third is this internal trust model that I just described. And then the last is what people are calling a golden bylaw model. And so the idea here is that ICANN would agree to a set of terms in the bylaws that would be essentially unmodifiable without the sort of nearly unanimous consent of, whether unanimous or nearly unanimous consent of the community, that if certain considerations were, if certain circumstances obtained, then the functions could be removed from ICANN. So I think the commonality really is among all of these proposals and among the discussions is one where people are happy with ICANN's performance of the IANA functions. There are lots of people that are unhappy, including lots of us, with other things ICANN's doing. But with respect to the functions, people seem to think that's working pretty well. So there isn't a desire to upset that apple cart. And there's a recognition that that could have it could be destabilizing in a time that's already kind of a time of a lot of change. But that there is this need to have some sort of mechanism for dealing with a circumstance in which ICANN fails to perform the functions for whatever reason. So I hope that's a helpful summary. I'm happy to take questions. There's like probably 15 more layers of detail, but it's probably not worth doing at this point.
Steve.
Thanks, Steve Del Bianco. Thanks, Aparna, and appreciate the leadership that you provided in drafting the BC's questions / comments. I note that the first two of the four that Aparna went through, we broadly call external, and the other two we broadly call internal, and that's where you'll hear the rhetoric around this week, internal versus external. And it seems like there's a lot more in common than in different between them, because in common they all have this principle of separability, which is if ICANN goes off the rails and doesn't run the root server naming functions properly, it gets separated from them. The contract gets pulled. They all have that in mind. They all have multi-stakeholder processes that are supposed to kick in to make that decision. And they're all very focused on the customers of the root server. And the customers of the root table, the name table, are really twofold. The direct customers are the root server operators, and they're very active, right? And the others, the registries themselves, whose entries are in the root table. So those customers are at the center of all of the four models, which broadly fall into internal and external. And all of this to say that there are more similarities than differences, but yet there is a critical difference, and it comes down to internal versus external. The external feels more complex. And that is what the essence of the BC comment was, that it feels more complex than it needs to be, and we established the principle that we should not make something any more complex than it needs to be. The more people I talk to in the CWG, we learn that there's complexities in both. The separability arrangements for an internal are going to be equally as complex as separability for an external. But the external function does require setting up an entity, a party, right, a counterparty, mm-hmm. Is that what the lawyers called it, to stand in the shoes of where the U.S. government NTIA has been in the past and whether that's adequate. I wanted to note that many people agreed with the BC's comments about the complexity of contract co. And I would ask Aparna whether in the past 3 weeks since we submitted those comments, do you feel like some of our questions about the complexity have been mitigated by answers and proposals, you know, including the document that came out this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I think that the key questions around complexity, a lot of them remain, and most of them are around kind of what is the relationship between the contract co and this multi-stakeholder review team, like, because I think what we don't want to have is, so we already have one sort of entity that's has a strong control over the functions, right, and that's the ICANN board and staff. And then we have all of us and sort of the GNSO as a group and the CCs, not to discount the rest of the ICANN community, who have a strong interest in ensuring the functions operate properly. And then, to my mind, like, introducing two more locuses of power on this already kind of complex landscape, without more information, it's nervous-making, I guess is the best way I would put it. It's not the best way to put it, maybe. And so I don't feel like there's been a ton of answers. I also feel like, and maybe this is just my perception, I think a lot of people are having the same questions we're having. So I don't think we're alone on that front.
If I could, this multi-stakeholder review team is not an entity. It's just a committee. It's not a legal entity. It doesn't need to be. And the customer service committee isn't an entity either.
No.
And it's my understanding that whether you went internal or external, you'd still have them there. So the complexities about who's on them and how powers they have, the escalation process, same in both cases. So the internal-external really comes down to the lawyers figuring out whether it's complex. I wanted to note that the other two functions in IANA, the numbers and the protocols, they already had external entities who could step into the shoes of NTIA as a counterparty. The IETF in the case of protocols, right? And the NRO, Number Resource Organization, in the case of numbers. That's why they got their plans done in no time at all. It was a simple thing for them to do. So they're already on the external separate entity model, but it didn't have to be a new entity. For them, it was an entity they already had.
I also think the difference there is that you have a very... Each of those is a narrow, well-defined community, whereas we have a very diffuse, hard-to-define community.
Andrew, Cheryl, J. Scott. I better put my glasses on.
Marilyn.
Andrew Harris, Amazon. Aparna, thanks. I'm curious if there's been any conversation about which of these would be more likely to be acceptable to NTIA. And I ask that specifically with in mind Larry Strickland's speech from a week and a half ago or so in Washington when he laid out a number of questions, but also his comments to the GAC in the GAC session earlier this week when he said, all of this that you're proposing is about accountability, and I don't see anything about operations in here, the operations of the functions, which I heard to say that he's saying none of this is acceptable. And so I'm curious what your view of that is and if folks think that any of these are sellable to NTIA.
Yeah, so I'm hearing the same chatter you're hearing and on the list. I think people read into the tea leaves whatever supports their position. So there hasn't been a lot of... There hasn't been a lot of the kind of questioning that you're doing, but I don't have much to add to that beyond I'm hearing the same things.
Cheryl?
My apologies, I came in late, so I don't know if this was touched on before I came in. I'm just curious with respect to each of the models if there's been also a deeper discussion on what specific body of law might apply given the different... I am a lawyer, so I apologize for that too.
Yeah, there has been some discussion. Obviously, the Jones Day memo, which was in response to the accountability group, has caused some spillover kerfuffle, I guess is the best way to put it, on the stewardship list. I think people have really sort of they're seeking outside counsel advice in the CWG on stewardship. And they're in the process of kind of getting a few firms to bid for it, and then they'll go forward. And I think that will be one of the questions addressed. There is like a, this would be my characterization. There is a small minority of people who do not support maintaining U.S. jurisdiction on the list, but the most of the discussion has either assumed that or explicitly been in favor of it.
On that point, sorry, if it's an external system, I would assume the contract would determine applicable law.
Right, or the trust.
If it's an internal system, I think it would be subject to the law where ICANN has its primary headquarters. So that would be California, obviously.
Right.
That's my gut, depending on how this plays out.
And I think tax implications.
I understand that there's some tax implications and that New York was talked about, too, because some of the complexities of what is available structurally under the state corporate structures. I think somebody really was pushing for New York, but I don't think that's been answered.
So that would be an external system.
Yes. Yes, an external system.
Also, in an internal trust model, whatever the sort of trust instrument is would make that same point. It would. I think you... So, I'm not a trust lawyer,
yeah.
Normally in a sort of legally binding document like that, you could specify choice of law. I don't see any reason why you wouldn't be able to, and then it would be hard to get out of that choice of law.
Jay Scott?
You know, I just want to say for the record that I agree with everything. This is really complex stuff, and it's driving more complexity into a system that already discourages participation because it seems so very complex. And I think we'll have if there's a hearing on this, I think we're going to have a better idea of what the U.S. government's thought is, or at least the politicians within the U.S. government think about it. But I think we really need to hone in that our comments continue to focus on a very simple, clean, easy to follow system. And we just have to be the voice of reason. No business people like complexity like that. That's the reason lawyers drive business people insane. It's because we make it so complex. And at the end of the day, all they want to do is run their businesses. And I think we need to keep that as a business user's constituency. It is very incumbent upon us to have that message and make that message very clear. I know my executives expect me to do that, and I hope we can all do that together and stay very focused and clean in our messaging.
I don't have a lot to add to that.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you did.
No. It was just digesting.
Marilyn.
Thanks. I really appreciate this, Aparna. You greatly simplified and clarified a lot of things that by putting it into this approach. I had a question about the issue of pulling the contract. And because I think that's the other thing that's pretty scary to business people and to governments who are friendly about this, right? That if the contract is pulled, so to speak, then what happens to it and what's the period of time and the structure when it's hosted as a stepchild or whatever someplace until there's a remedial fix to the organization so that the contract either returns or doesn't return. I mean, this process of if we blow up, right, where does the contract go for X period of time, and then is there a procedure to allow it's probably a lawyerly phrase for this, but a remediation and a return?
Yeah, so I think that's a really good question. It's one that people have flagged as needing to be fleshed out further. There are a lot of different ideas. I'll just, in terms of how an escalation process might work, I'll give you a couple examples. It won't be an exhaustive list, and I don't think that the group is there yet in terms of saying this is the definitive way that this escalation process is going to work. But one idea is that in the internal trust model, for example, that the members of the guardian entity who could either be constituted separately or could simply be the heads of all the SOs and ACs with increased representation for the GNSO for all the stakeholder groups, that some supermajority of those individuals would have to call for sort of, like, do a demand letter or the equivalent of a demand letter, and then before the functions could actually be pulled, there would have to be ratification through the community as a whole. So if you're a lawyer, the way you can think of this is something along the lines of, it takes four judges on the Supreme Court to grant certification of a petition for certiorari in the Supreme Court, and then, but to prevail on the merits, you have to have five votes. So it would be something like that, where there's a threshold for calling the question and then a threshold that's higher for moving the functions. I think there's also been some discussion that issues would be escalated up through the customer service committee, and that that would be the first point of port of call for, like, you'd have to exhaust that field before kind of going to the next level. So there's a lot of different ways that you can do this. I think people are rightfully worried about that option being a pretty drastic one. There hasn't been a lot of talk about the precise thing that you mentioned, which is, like, if there's an opportunity to cure and then the functions either never leave ICANN or they go back to ICANN, people just haven't been focused on that because I think they're really trying to get the bigger piece right first.
Other questions, thoughts, Steve?
Yeah, thanks. The comment that the BC put in includes a suggestion that Aparna came up with, which was an emergency backend registry operator concept. And that's specifically designed to suggest that if there's a period of transition or the inability of ICANN to execute the process, it can be moved. And to tell you the truth, moving the root table is somewhat trivial. It's 1,500 rows,
yeah.
And it has an IP address and a TLD name in it. You can fit it on an index card.
Right.
There's nothing to it, and there are 13 root server operators who pick up a copy every morning when they start their operations. I mean, I'm exaggerating a little bit of it, but it's a relatively simple matter. It's not like moving an entire registry and all the registrants' information, which is what EBR was set up. So I say that to suggest that overall, J. Scott, simple versus complex. An apartment building is extremely complex to design and build, but it's really easy for the people to live in. So let's not get wrapped around the axle of the complexity of living with the new arrangement, because once it's done, you won't even know it's there. We've never had an incident with the running of the publication of the root table. It's just not that hard. And we are likely, after designing this complex structure, to live in a very simple structure where the mechanisms that Aparna is describing are likely to be rarely, if ever, invoked. And when they are, even the downside of finding a temporary parking place to run the route, again, easy to do. So it's almost as if we have to gut this out. Let's go ahead and get through, push through, and deal with the complexity. And some of the complexity of what to do in right to cure and challenging, that would be there whether it's internal and external. What I keep learning is that when we talk about the complexities, they're almost always the same complexity with internal and external. I'm at the point where I don't even care. Flip a coin, internal, external. It's mostly about which one will make ICANN reminded every day that if they screw this up, they're going to lose it. And sometimes external feels a little better for that.
Right.
Aparna?
Yeah, I think you got
Phil. Oh, sorry. Okay.
I'll just respond to Steve, and I think my comment's responsive to Jay Scott's earlier one as well. I think one of the things, and this is true for both the external and internal models alike, that we just want to be mindful of is, to Jay Scott's point about volunteer burnout and complexity, and to your point about we want this to be lightweight and hopefully we'll never have to deal with it again, one of the things that I've been thinking a lot about is sort of the undesirability of creating more committees. And so trying to figure out if there's a way, for example, for the multi-stakeholder review team to just be constituted like from existing structures, because I think for two reasons. One is we have these structures in place already. The other is I think if you create a new structure, then like that structure is like looking for things to do and has an opportunity to sort of expand its mission. And I think that like we definitely don't want that in this context. We want the mission to be very, very narrow. And so for lack of a nicer way of saving it, like dumping it on people's plates where their workload's already really full makes it less likely for that to happen.
David, then Phil?
No, let Phil go.
Phil?
And comment.
Phil Corwin for the record. They're both pretty complex, and they share a lot of the same elements, and for me, my brain goes into vapor lock when trusts come up. I'm more comfortable with contracts. I think what we need, what we should consider, is which one enhances the effectiveness of the accountability measures that are being created. And to me, the one virtue of external is that it implies a contract of some limited term where it creates a periodic review where ICANN has to earn the right to continue to hold contract, which we all know is going to hold it forever, you know, unless something disastrous happens. But it gives you more leverage for the accountability. As with an external, with an internal, odds are you would never exercise the option to switch it to an Ibero or somebody else unless total disaster. So I'm not arguing for either one, but I think we should consider which model, how it's interrelated, since it's going to be in it. NTIA made it clear they wanted a complete, intertwined, integrated package delivered, and so I think we need to consider how what's done on the IANA functions best enhances the accountability measures that are created and guarantees their effectiveness.
Just as at the risk of muddying the waters further, there's a lot of people who are in the contract co camp who don't support like a regular RFP, so the contract wouldn't come up for a renewal periodically. And then there's also people who favor an internal model who want regular review, so I'm just not sure it's as black and white as contract means regular review and internal doesn't. At least not in the minds of the proponents of these models.
Quick response. Okay, it's not making trouble.
Okay,
now.
Move.
Nobody breathe. I just want to comment. To me, the idea of a perpetual contract with no end date is a rather. If you're going to do that, you might as well make it internal, because at that point, it's not much of a difference, really. The chief virtue of a contract is periodic review when the contract comes up for renewal.
You know, I had just a really quick point. I mean, I agreed with what Steve and Aparna had raised earlier, although we're a few comments back. I think a lot of it is also perception, just from the conversations I'm having for people. People have a hard idea with internal from a perception, from an external view looking in, so to speak. And I agree both are very complex. I think, in part, it also comes down to enforceability, because we're replacing a role that the U.S. government had, and so whatever we put back into that role, who or what or, you know, whatever you want to call it, internal, external, what safeguard is really going to be able to have the actual enforcement authority to go into action efficiently if something does go awry?
I guess I've seen on the list since I just arrived today that there was some conversation about timing of everything now. And do you have any sense of what's going to happen and what is required of the community? If it seems highly unlikely, given the very huge outstanding questions that need to be resolved, that this is going to be done by September. And so do we need to do something to suggest as a community that the contract be extended for a period of time?
it's Marilyn speaking. I think it's a related question. I'm not amend your question, but maybe add on to it. And at what point would it be helpful to do that? And would it be harmful at certain other points?
It's definitely something that's very much on the mind of people on the list, and I think that they're planning to address that question in the working session that is tomorrow. I'll have to check and tell you what exactly the timing is, but people are thinking, I think there's growing acceptance that there will be an extension. The question is just how that comes about. I don't think there's anyone, with the possible exception of the European Commission, saying this is going to get done by September.
Cheryl.
On the extension point, has there been any discussion about how long? I mean, would it be, I know there are two buckets, but would it be like 3 months, 6 months?
Some people are saying 6 months and some are saying a full new term. And I think there's views in between too.
Other questions? Comments or thoughts?
'Cause they can do it again in 6 months if
right.
they need it.
Exactly.
Marilyn?
Yeah, it's Marilyn speaking. I just wanted to comment on this issue of 2 years. Geopolitically, I think that would blow things up on other fronts. The WSIS plus 10, other things. Since they have the option to do it in segments, it would seem to me, just speaking from what I'm seeing from a world view, it would be better to do a 6 to 9 or 9 months, and then if they had to, do it again. But if they go for 2 years, I think we'll see governments being negative.
Unless I heard her wrong, when I was in London, Fiona spoke, and she said the contract is written where it's 1 year extensions. It's already written into the contract. She said, don't allow this September 15th deadline to be a false deadline for you. The contract is written. I believe I heard her say that. Now, I could be misremembering, but I believe she said in an open meeting, don't be focused on September 15th, 2015. The contract is built in with 3 1-year extension terms built in or something like that.
No, I've Phil Corin for the right. I've read that. I've looked at that contract. It allows NTIA the option for two-year extensions.
Okay.
Now, the question is, could they interpret that to do an extension of less than 2 years? And I understand the politics that they might prefer a six-month or a year extension to keep pressure on the community and to show the rest of the world that it's not just some delay game that's where nothing will ever happen.
Thanks.
David?
No, it's
okay. Anyone else? Well, thank you, Aparna. I mean, that was incredibly helpful for sort of laying out what the options are, and at least I think for me, helping me to better understand sort of what we're possibly looking at. So I think that's been incredibly helpful. Obviously, one of the major considerations has to do with the accountability mechanisms in terms of, once the transition happens, well, in order for the transition to happen, that these accountability mechanisms, at least in Workstream 1, are implemented. And I know that when we started to talk about some of the different accountability measures, there was a pretty long list, and we wanted to spend some time talking about those, and nobody knows it better than Steve. So, Steve?
Thanks, Elise. This is Steve Del Bianco. Most of what I'll discuss has been covered a little bit over the last 4 days, but many of you just arrived. Nobody told you about the weekend section that I cannot actually starts on Saturday. The other is that the policy calendar that I circulated today, the very end of it, has any documents that I referred to, either as attachments or hyperlinks. This should be a very quick update, and I could follow that by taking your questions. So the accountability track, or the CCWG on accountability, was literally conceived here in Singapore last March, and a number of you were in the room. It was next door. It was the CSG meeting at which Larry Strickland came in on a Sunday. And at that meeting, a number of us pressed him, and he admitted. He said, yes, I understand that the U.S. government's power to withdraw the IANA contract, which Aparna just talked about for half an hour, that power to withdraw the contract kept ICANN accountable. It kept the board from going off the rails. It made sure that ICANN wouldn't quit the affirmation of commitments, which it can do with 3 months' notice. And it kept ICANN from broadly expanding its scope, knowing that if it got out of line, the Commerce Department would say, wait a minute, we're not going to give you the contract again. And if they lose IANA, they feel like they lose legitimacy. This happened in 2011 when the IANA contract was up for renewal. Rod Beckstrom was at the helm. The Commerce Department asked the entire world, what do you think we need to prove the operational excellence of IANA? People commented on it, and ICANN's response to the proposal was deemed inadequate. So the Commerce Department said, you know what, we're just going to cancel the RFP, extend ICANN for several months, and get another a round of bidding. Well, that got their attention, and that's precisely the kind of discipline that Larry Strickling acknowledged exists. So we were able to conceive a year ago here in this facility this notion that in parallel with giving up the IANA contract, we've got to find some other mechanism to replace the leverage of pulling IANA. And that's accountability for ICANN in all of its other activities, and in its policymaking, its compliance enforcement, all of what ICANN does outside of the maintenance of this root table. So the accountability that Aparna had discussed was the narrow kind of accountability that they run that root table correctly, that they run the protocols and numbers correctly. Now this is a different kind of accountability, the capital A accountability for things like adventures in Netmundial. Accountability like the singular plural silliness. So you know what I'm talking about. It was conceived here a year ago, but it took 9 difficult months to be born, and that's because ICANN's management and board didn't want to acknowledge it. Larry Strickling did, but ICANN's board and management denied this notion of the need for any kind of accountability like that. And a number of you were there in London when the community was revolting. I know they think we're always revolting, but we were particularly revolting in London, saying that we needed the ability for the community to drive this process. And it was a rare show of unity. All of the GNSO stood together at the microphone, and the ALAC backed us as well. And even that message really fell on deaf ears until the Istanbul Internet Governance Forum. And it wasn't even an ICANN meeting, but everyone from ICANN was there, the board was there, and a good number of the people in this room were there, and we used it to really bring this to a head, that the community was really upset that ICANN was not allowing the community to define the accountability of ICANN to the community. That gave rise to the idea that, yes, we're going to allow a new process. But even then, management tried to control who gets to be on the process and everything else. But long story short, by December 9th of 2014, the charter was finished, and David Ferris of the BC worked on an excellent charter for this cross-community working group, so CCWG we call it. And that charter is what we started with on December the 9th. And on that group, the commercial stakeholders group has one rep. We've discussed extensively in yesterday's meeting how we're going to fix that in the future so that the BC, IPC, and ISP all should have a delegate or a representative on that group. For the time being, it's me, and we've had meetings every week since December the 9th.